Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission, to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/coachandrew. If you're listening live and you have a question, the phone number here is 646-929-2893. Again, that's 646-929-2893. If you call, you'll be able to listen to the show on the phone, and if you press the number 1, I'll know you have a question. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in. So my guest for tonight tells me that there's a huge mistake you're probably making right now, and you don't even know it. What's worse is that most people will see you doing it and will unconsciously recognize it instantly. Sharon Saylor, MBA, is a communication success strategist who trains professionals on how to become stronger, more influential communicators and leaders. She teaches people how to communicate with confidence and clarity by matching their body language to what their mouth is saying. They don't know why, but they just know something's not right. So joining me on the phone today is Sharon Saylor, the author of the upcoming What Your Body Says and How to Master the Message. Sharon, are you with us?
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me tonight, Andrew.
My pleasure, Sharon. So, you know, you have me hooked. What's this one thing I might be doing to turn everyone off?
You know, we all do it, and that's our breathing. But sometimes we do it wrong. By that, I mean we breathe really high up in our chest, like this, and we start to sound frantic and panicked, and that instantly people go, oh my gosh, what's wrong with them? Oh my gosh, do they know something I don't know? Is there danger? Should I start to go into fight or flight mode myself? And oftentimes we turn people off just because we're breathing high and panicky like this.
And where should we be breathing?
Breathing down and complete and low. I like to call it belly breathing, down into the full belly. I sometimes get pushback from women because they're like, no, then my tummy will pooch. But, you know, that really is a little thing to give up because we'll sound so much more confident, so much more in command, especially with women. We have naturally higher voices. So if we're breathing really high, it tends to get higher. I'm breathing really high right now. My voice tends to get higher. And so many times the guys will, why are you so angry? And we'll be going, I'm not angry, but it's because we're breathing way up here in our chest.
So if I breathe down really low and I could sound like, Luke, you are my son.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So that's why Darth had so much power.
Exactly. It gives that real command presence.
Wow. Well, that's a great thing to know. So, you know, you have graciously sent me a pre-publication copy of your book, which I've been reading, and there are all these interesting diagrams on actually how to move and when, how to breathe, and I'm thinking at some point in this conversation we may want to do some kind of a demonstration. Right here and on live non-TV.
Sounds wonderful. It's easy to explain.
Okay. Well, let's get back to that in a little bit. We'll get to some of the big concepts here. Well, first of all, what are a couple of other common mistakes that people make?
Well, you know, there's this old saying of look them in the eye, and you can actually have too much eye contact. I know that sounds a little odd because all of the big salespeople say, oh, they won't trust you unless you look them in the eye. But I don't know if you've ever met people that believe that so strongly that they're staring at you and it just becomes creepy.
Yeah, sure.
So I say take your cues from the other person. If they're glancing away or blinking, go ahead and blink. If they tend to like a lot of eye contact, stay with good eye contact. But if they're uncomfortable, if you see them looking down or looking away, it means that your eye contact is making them uncomfortable. So
it sounds like you're utilizing some aspects of mirroring. Is that correct?
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's fun because you can use it the other way too. If you're wanting to shift someone's breathing or have them do a body language move that you would like them to do, you can start doing that and they'll start mirroring you as well. It's completely unconscious. We just start mirroring and matching the other person.
Because I've certainly learned the part where I copy them, but I didn't learn the part where they copy me. So this is new to me.
It's really fun to watch. Sometimes I like to make a little game of it and see, okay, if I take a particular stance or do, you know, a particular pose or something, can I make them shift to be a similar? Now, usually it's not 100%. They
right.
wouldn't be matching you 100%, but you're like, oh, I got them to lean back in their chair. Cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. So all of these come under the realm of nonverbals?
Yes.
Okay.
Oddly, even the ones with our voice, meaning like the tempo, the volume, the cadence that we put to it, the way if we speak very slow and stretch out our words, all of that is our nonverbals. Even though we're using words to express ourselves, how we use those words are nonverbal communication as well. That's why it's more than just body language.
Right. Well, I think I understand that, ma'am.
And in that case, you would want to speak a little slower.
Right.
Because if I was speaking really fast to you like this, your metabolism would start to go very fast, and you'd go,
mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that person?
Right. Now, I as most people who listen to the show will know, I am a New Yorker, born and bred and buttered, and I am somebody who, anybody from New York is known for being a fast talker, I think. I don't know that I'm as bad as everyone out here, but we're known for the fast talk. And when we encounter people, say, from the middle of the country or certainly down south, like I was just giving you a little bit of that southern drawl kind of thing of the slow southern speaker, there can be a real big clash.
Yes. Yes. And it's completely unintentional on both parties.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
going, I'm trying to get along. I don't know what's going on here. I just got in from New York last night, and you're right. I am from the Pacific Northwest, and we
mm-hmm.
talk slower here than in New York. And it is a real challenge to keep up the speed so that I'm being heard and able to be understood at a way that they're used to hearing. So it's always fun to try and keep that up and keep it going.
So as part of what you do then, would you help someone in that sort of clash situation?
Well, my biggest recommendation from that clash situation is once you're aware, we can all feel when rapport is being lost. We can all feel when it's just not quite going right, like, you know, that bad first blind date kind of thing
mm-hmm.
where you're like, oh, geez, is this not going right?
Oh, yeah.
But maybe you have to be there. Maybe it's a sales call or the boss says you've got to go get that account sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. That's where, again, we go into the mirror and matching and start to, if they're a slower speed, we don't want to mimic. So if they have, we'll say, that southern drawl, we don't want to mimic so they think we're making fun of them, but we want to just slow down our speech patterns.
Right. So now, why don't you tell me a little bit more about, you know, your background and how you got to be this person who knows this stuff?
Well, I am a huge lifelong learner, and
mm-hmm.
about 15 years ago, I was surprised when someone told me that I just never listened to them, and I had known them for a very long time, and it really broke up a long-time relationship, and so I dove into learning more about communication, and along the way, I met a man who later became my mentor named Michael Grinder, who's a foremost authority on this, and I've spent the last 15 years teaching with him and understanding everything I could about it. He's known for teaching teachers nonverbal classroom management, and my expertise is more in the corporate world. That's where my background is, and so I've wanted to bring it out into the corporate world and how we can help our teams run better and our sales meetings run better and just general getting good quality business relationships.
Mm.
Mentors are, for me, mentors are the best way to learn anything is finding someone who's an expert in that field and, shall I say, cajoling or convincing them that you're the person to mentor and apprentice under them.
Yeah, and that could be challenging, and yet there, I know a lot of people who have been able to have amazing mentors. I encountered somebody whose son works currently for Disney as an Imagineer. What do they call them? The people who make those amazing things they have at Disney World. You know, all
yeah.
the. An Imagineer, or something?
I think, yeah, kind of like a reframe of the word engineer. I think it is.
Yeah, they're engineers who create amazing things like out of like what people dream of, to blow people away, basically. you know, especially if you're a kid, and that was his lifelong dream, you know, from childhood. But he got to have as his mentor that fellow who. Now, the name is just went out of my head. The guy who was dying and wrote they made a book out of his speech that was for his son, and he was on Oprah.
Oh, I want to say Randy Pausch?
Yes, the guy, yes. Boy, I just had a little brain thingy. Yes, that fellow. He got him as his mentor, as his personal mentor. He was in his one of his classes. And that guy really took him under his wing. Imagine that, having that guy.
Oh, yes. You know, and there's somebody out there for everybody like that. I have found letting people know what your dream is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you've got that passion, I know you're a coach that works a lot with helping people find their purpose and passion and bring it into the world.
Right.
When you've got that passion and you find an expert, It's almost contagious. They're as passionate about the subject too, and I've been lucky to find great mentors throughout my life that help me explore and learn more about my passion about communication.
Mm. And even though it's a little bit off topic, if you could want to spend a minute or two telling us how you got mentors, because that's something I think is always of interest.
Yes, you know, an area of interest for me because I find so many people just saying, well, how do I learn this? My recommendation for mentors is if you find someone who you have admire their work and you have great respect for their work and you have a deep understanding of their work. So, I mean, if they've written articles or books, read those and really immerse yourself in their work.
Mm-hmm.
Then the best thing I've found is I just ask. I let them know of my passion for their work. I let them know that I understand their work. And oftentimes, I always get a yes. Sometimes it's a little bit of a, well, I'm right in the middle of writing a book right now. Can we do it in 6 months or a year? Whatever, something like that. But I've never had anybody turn me down, at least from starting and opening a conversation. Haven't been able to mentor with everybody I've spoken to.
Sure.
But how we started that relationship and ability to talk to them at some point in time.
You know, I think that you might want to consider making an e-book on how to get a mentor because you seem to have gotten the knack for it.
Well, it is a passion of mine, building relationships for sure.
Mm.
But, you know, I think the key number one thing is most people don't ask.
Well, it's like Wayne Gretzky says, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
I love that quote. That's a good one.
Yeah.
It's true in life, too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Not just hockey.
Not just hockey. you're in the right area of the country to know who I'm talking about, too. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even though we're not quite in Canada, but hockey's a big thing out here for sure.
So, you know, when it comes to the nonverbals and this whole arena, have you always gotten it right, or are you sent out messages that have surprised you?
Oh, all the time. You know, I know a lot about the subject, but I'm the first to say that I'm really not sure anybody is ever an expert. There's always something more to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to have, when we're doing our nonverbals, the thing that is important is to have the intention in your mind to have a positive result.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have the matching emotions that go with that. Because a lot of times, maybe you've met someone and they're grumbly and growly, and so their intention isn't in alignment, and they'll go, I'm fine. And you'll go, well, I don't really think you're fine. And they're, no, I'm fine. And you're like, oh, why do I not think you're fine? It's because their intention and their emotions are not lined up with what they're saying.
Right. And you're
and
reading
so a lot
them.
Of times, yeah. And a lot of times we can, even being practiced, you know, we can let our emotions filter through, and they mm-hmm. will, our emotions will always show up no matter what training we've had.
So here now here we're creating the possibility of rather than having our emotions dictate our body language, we're having our minds create it with a particular intention, right?
Yes.
So, which is a whole interesting thing. Now, are you familiar with people like Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Great, you know, because he talks a lot about getting into state, and he does this great exercise, and I've used it with people where if somebody's like, especially if they're in a bad mood or they're feeling sad, and I have them stand up and tilt their head to face the ceiling and have them grin as wide a grin as they can and challenge them to have a sad thought.
It's true.
It's really, really hard because, you know, you can actually change your state by changing your body, like how you're standing. You know, you could actually change exactly how you're feeling. So, like, you could act as if you're all excited, and all of a sudden you're excited.
And that's very true. And when I was in New York giving a presentation this last week to other presenters on body language from the stage, the question came up, well, I'm always so nervous on stage. And one of my key recommendations is to act as if.
Mm-hmm.
To find a presenter that you really admire their style and act as if. And because once our muscle memory and our body is acting as if,
mm-hmm.
our emotions change. But it also goes the other way, too. If our intention and our emotions are out of alignment, that comes through in our body language. So it's kind of a two-way street.
So when you're working with this type of material, there's actually knowing the body language movements, you know, all the things that you show in the book, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's on the intellectual level knowing it, and then there is the doing it, but there's also, it seems like there's also this alignment involved.
Yes, there is, but that's really more about just practicing them, understanding.
I meant alignment in terms of alignment of your, what you were just saying, your intention. What was you just said? Your intention
and your emotions.
And your emotions. So that's what I meant by alignment. I don't mean by the physical alignment.
Right.
But so you can do this stuff, and then how do you do it so that you look natural? You're not looking phony. Like what's keeping that from happening?
You know, people say that to me when I say, well, simple things like if you want people to share with you, use a palm-up gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want people to know that you're serious, use a sideways palm gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask that, you know, well, won't I look phony? Well, no, because no one knows that that's your intention and that you're doing it.
Right.
So it's your timing. I like to say to try to keep the timing in line with your words. Meaning that you want, as the words come out and you want it to be taken as serious, to have the
mm-hmm.
timing correct, which takes practice sometimes. But other than that, you won't look phony or forced because it's kind of like music. It can be still wonderful even if you're slightly off.
Right.
I had a piano teacher who was really into improv. It was like, well, we'll learn music and notes later, but let's just get comfortable with the flow of the music. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes we would hit an off note, and he said, don't stop, just keep going. No
right.
one will hear it because all the music is beautiful, so just keep going. So that's my recommendation. If you're timing slightly off, don't call attention to it. Just keep going.
Yeah, you don't want to say, oops, excuse me while I move my hand again in that direction.
Which some people do as they start to learn this, and I'm like, no, keep going, just keep going.
Right. That would be really funny to see. So are there nonverbals that can make me look more or less intelligent?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite one is I see on ESPN or some of those where they're interviewing athletes, and these are prime athletes who you know are running, besides being athletes, running great big businesses, so we're going, they have to be intelligent. They're obviously intelligent people when you hear them speak. But a lot of times their nonverbals make them look less intelligent. And one of the number one ones that they do is their mouth breathers. If you want to be seen as unintelligent, breathe through your mouth. All it takes is closing your mouth and breathing through your nose, and you'll look much more intelligent.
Really?
Absolutely. I want to encourage the listeners, if they have a mirror handy, just look in the mirror and lightly lax the jaw so your mouth drops open, and you'll realize it's not a very intelligent look.
Wow.
And that's what happens to mouth breathers all the time. Their mouth is always open to get enough oxygen. Has nothing to do with our intelligence, but it makes us look more intelligent immediately.
Okay, I know. I really don't know how much I'm a mouth breather, you know, but I know like I probably am more than I hope I am. Now I'm going to be looking.
People that have allergies run into that.
Yeah, that would be me.
Well, yeah, I find that a lot. And so a couple of tips I give is one, if you're sitting, it's not the best nonverbal, but it's a good way to train yourself to keep your mouth closed, is just to put your hand on your chin as just a muscle memory reminder. It's not the best nonverbal, but it's better than having your mouth hang open. So as you're teaching yourself to keep your mouth closed and breathe through your nose, I like to say just put your hand to your chin to remind you. Another nonverbal that some people do that make them look less intelligent goes right back to breathing, and that's when we fill our pauses with ums and ahs and you knows.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember when Caroline Kennedy was running for us.
Oh, yes, absolutely. She was, I don't think I'd ever heard a worse example, and it really made me think she has no idea what she's talking about.
Right, exactly. And I don't know her personally, but that was the message she portrayed, was not of a very high understanding of the issues. Or I'll even want to say it portrayed somewhat of a lack of intelligence, which I'm sure she's highly intelligent, but it was the message that was being sent was wrong. What happens is when we get nervous and we don't breathe completely, our brain uses those verbal fillers to force us to breathe. Those ums and ahs and you knows are really our brain telling us that you're not breathing correctly, get me more oxygen right now. So those ums force us to exhale. So we have to immediately inhale to get more oxygen to our brain.
Have you ever been to Toastmasters?
I've been to Toastmasters. I have never been one to get up and give the speeches, but I have been to Toastmasters.
I went to one or two of them, and first of all, the one that I went to, they made everybody get up, even if you'd never been there before. You were up. If you walked in the room, you would be getting up. But they had an and you know counter. They had a person who sat there and counted the ums and you knows and ums, and then you got a report at the end of your speech. You had 17 you knows.
But did anyone ever tell them how to stop them?
You know, no.
See, that's exactly my reason. That it's fine to tell someone you had 17 you knows and 21 ums, but it's so unconscious. We don't know we're doing it. We don't know that we're so in the moment trying to stay with the content, trying to deliver the speech spot on, not miss a word, that we don't realize we're not breathing properly. Of course we're breathing, otherwise, you know, we'd be fainted on the floor.
Right.
But we don't realize we're not breathing properly. So the key to that is to have someone count them is great. But then
it made you aware of it.
But it didn't give you the answer like, okay, how do I stop it? Because
the only answer they really had was, you know, being aware and then consciously trying to force them out.
But then we fill with other words. Have you ever met someone who's going along in their speech and then they realize they've said an and then they go, well, and they start filling with other words.
Hmm.
So it doesn't really solve the problem.
So what's the solution, Sharon?
pausing more and breathing during that pause. When we speak, naturally pause wherever you'd put a comma and mm-hmm. take a breath, and wherever you'd put a period, pause and take a breath. And that will cure the ums and the ahs and the you knows. It's just pausing and breathing when we pause.
So we need more commas and periods. We need to go to a period and comma person and buy as many of them as possible.
That's true. Keep them in your pocket.
Less vowels, more commas.
Yes, they'll come in handy when you're giving a public presentation and you want to sound intelligent, putting a pause wherever you put a comma or a period.
Exactly. And if you're listening to the show, I will sell you 100 commas and pauses for only $9.95.
Right. And then we could do, I'll take a vowel as well.
Take a vowel for Vanna White. Absolutely. If you act in the next 5 minutes, I will double the order. Can you tell that I listen to one too many infomercials?
I think so. You've got the down pat. But wait,
there's more. That's right. We'll triple your offer. Okay, so who's better at or worse at the nonverbal communication, men or women?
That's kind of a tough one. It really depends. I think women are better at reading other people's nonverbals and understanding the hidden messages behind them. Men, this is in brain science a little bit, but men are able to speak and think at the same time, but not able to access emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Women have more connections between the emotional center of the brain and the speech center. And I think any man that's ever fought with a woman would validate that without the meaning science behind it.
Yes.
But there is true brain science behind it. So women are better at reading other people's nonverbals. Men, though, once they understand the meaning behind the nonverbals, are excellent at understanding which hand gestures mean what, how to have command presence, how to make connection with other people. So when we're doing the what I call intentional nonverbals, ones where we've thought about what is our intention, what is our meaning of the message, do we want to make connection, do we want to sound credible, do we want to have command presence, men and women are pretty equal at understanding that, but in the reading of it, women are generally statistically better.
So how difficult or easy is it, would you say, for the average person to master this type of material?
Very easy. I like to say just in the book, I offer a whole bunch, as you know, with the manuscript I sent you, a whole bunch of suggestions, and to pick your favorite one and practice it for a week. Practice it with the local barista, in the grocery checkout line, nice safe places. Not in the office until you really get it down. Just nice safe places, family, friends, strangers. And then once you've got it down, choose another one that you really like. And pretty soon, it's just part of your muscle memory. When I was first learning it, I would do what I call the seeking hand gesture, which is the palm up gesture. And you motion out towards the person and motion back to yourself. And that's saying, I'm open to dialogue. I'd like to have a conversation here. And I would use that for a while purposely and consciously. And the first time I did it, caught myself doing it unconsciously, I just sort of chuckled inside. It was like, oh, I've got it now. I've got it. I'm going to move on to the next one.
Well, that's really cool. Well, there's like this thing about learning where you go through various phases of mastery. Well, you start out with what's the word I'm looking for? Where you're completely incompetent. So you have this conscious incompetence is like the first phase of learning, where you have to look at everything you're doing and you're really kind of inept at it. And you're like, okay, hand over here. You know, like when you learn to dance with those steps on the ground. You know, those footsteps. That would be the ultimate of conscious incompetence, and then going through those phases until you get to that what's called the unconscious competence, where it's, you know, you could probably drive now for 50 miles and not realize what you've done, but the first time you ever got behind the wheel, every last thing you did, 10 and 2, hand over left over right, and put hand out window.
And it's the same concept as we're learning what certain nonverbals mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same concept. But once we're consciously aware of them, it just becomes so much better to let people understand the intention of your message. It's so easy to shut people down. If you use a downward palm hand gesture, that means not open to negotiation. It's better with the fingers closed. A little cross-cultural, I'll say, humor here. If you do that same gesture in the Mediterranean or some places in South America, but with your fingers widespread, downward palm, fingers widespread, you're pretty much giving what we call the one-finger salute here in the United
States. Wow.
So you want to keep your fingers next to each other if you use a downward palm gesture to mean not open to negotiation. I don't want to hear it.
Like talk to the hand kind of a thing?
It's sort of a talk to the hand, but the palm is facing down to the ground.
Okay.
If we did a talk to the hand, boy, that can always start. That's when you really want to escalate things. The old Saturday Night Live talk to the hand.
Right.
If you want to escalate, use that one.
It's like a hand way of saying whatever.
Exactly.
We
have all these slight little. Now, see, the whatever one, oftentimes we do unconsciously, and then we wonder why the people's feelings are hurt or they get mad at us. That's one that just sort of comes out because of our emotion at the moment. So.
Well, is it whatever related to the eye roll?
Oh, not sort of. The eye roll is really more about feeling. They're very similar, but oftentimes the eye roll is done when we don't feel safe. The whatever means that we're feeling fairly safe in this relationship, that we're not, that it's not a dangerous thing. Because it's a much more assertive move. The eye roll is really the same thing, like whatever, I can't believe what I'm hearing, or oh my gosh, not again, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more that we're not feeling as safe as with the whatever hand gesture.
Now, I understand that there's a community trying to make eye rolling illegal.
Yes. Oh, I know. I read that about that city council. And it was in Elmhurst, Illinois, where the city council members, I guess, were rather frustrated with members of the community rolling their eyes during the community meetings, city council meetings. And they're trying to figure out if they can make it illegal to roll eyes. And I had to write about it recently because I started laughing. I'm like, you guys, that's not the problem. That's a symptom of the problem. The problem is, your constituency doesn't feel safe to express any opinions. So what is it about the authoritarian rule of this council that is causing members of the constituency to need to roll their eyes? It's a very teenage-like response. I mean, we've all been around teenagers where you get that eye roll of that whatever eye roll. It's the same type of response. They don't feel safe, but they want to be heard, and so they roll their eyes.
Well, I understand the next move on the council is to ban the shrug.
Yes. Well, pretty soon we'll ban all the nonverbals. We just have to sit with our hands and look straight forward in very George Orwellian type of stance, I suppose.
Yeah, anybody who says, what the, that's like 2 years in jail.
Exactly. That's the felony.
That should be a felony, absolutely. So now, by the way, is there any relationship to this type of communication of nonverbals that where you're using specific gestures? Is there any relationship to this in NLP that you were aware of?
Yes and no. A lot of the science comes from it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the science on body movement and gestures and sorts of things. They're related, but not closely related.
Okay. That just popped in my head. I have a little bit of interest in that as well. The NLP, for anybody listening who says, what's he talking about? It's neuro-linguistic programming.
Exactly. NLP. And just a little side note, my mentor is Michael Grinder, John Grinder, the founder of NLP, as well, with Richard Bandler. They're brothers, John and Richard. John and Michael are brothers.
Well, how do you like them apples?
Yeah,
so I'm not,
I have
the you
background.
Know, at least I'm in the ballpark, or the relation related somehow.
Right, they are related, but
they're brothers. You could say that nonverbals and NLP are brothers.
Well, yes, but the interesting thing about neurolinguistic programming is it's, it goes off in other directions too, using language to change minds and alter behavior as well.
Okay, so among people that like that you've noticed out in the world, people in particular that you, somebody in our audience might recognize. As good and bad examples of people who have mastered or tremendously not mastered nonverbal communications. Anybody comes to mind?
Absolutely. Politics aside, I'm just talking specific nonverbals, okay?
Okay.
My contrast is between ex-President Bush and President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about President Bush was when he was behind a lectern, two nonverbal things he did that really discredited his message. Regardless of the message, he could be wishing us all, you know, a happy holiday season, and we would still not have a tendency to believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was he had a tendency to not have his weight on both feet. He liked to rock his toe on the floor. And that's a sheer sign of incongruency with your message. And the other nonverbal that he did that led us not to believe him, even in the most simplest and heartfelt of types of messages, was a death grip on the lectern. The white knuckle is a sure sign that either, you know, that can easily be trained not to do, but it's a sure sign that it gives people away, like, I'm not comfortable up here. And when we see other people not being comfortable, we begin to question the truth of their message. It's like, why are they uncomfortable? If they're so sure that this is the truth, why are they so uncomfortable? And that animal lizard part of our brain starts to kick in and ask all those questions.
Mm.
And if we notice Obama a lot of times, he does hold the lectern, but not as stiffly, not with that death grip, shall I say, on it. And he's always very comfortable with putting his weight centered over both feet. And when the weight is centered over both feet, it's a much more credible stance.
Oh, let's just go through a few presidents now, since we're in that mode. And strictly in terms of their ability to master or not master nonverbal communication. So I'm thinking of the great communicator Ronald Reagan. What did you think of him in this regard? We're not talking politics here.
Not talking politics, but we have to remember he was a trained actor.
Yes, absolutely.
And so a lot of the nonverbals that I teach in my book actually relate to acting.
Mm.
And Reagan had the power of acting behind him. He knew the power of the pause. You can stand there and be speaking and have a gesture, but I'll say it's frozen in midair. You want to put your hand out and keep it frozen in midair during the pause. People won't interrupt you. What that says with that gesture frozen out there during the pause is that I still have the mic. Wait, there's more to come. And he was a master of that. And that's why people were mesmerized every time he got up to speak. It's because of his acting background. He knew how to make eye contact and mastered his breathing and the pause, the power of the pause.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. How about...
But the power behind that was he had enough breath to get that entire statement out with the same amount of force. He didn't run out of breath at the end. You can imagine, like, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, as he ran out of breath, wouldn't have been as powerful.
That would have been bad.
Yes.
We'd probably still have a wall right now, I think.
Absolutely. But he had enough breath to get the entire statement out with the same complete force as he started and he ended. And that's why it was so powerful.
How about Mr. Clinton?
He's also a very excellent communicator. And here's someone that I want to speak about has natural charisma as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us have to train ourselves to have charisma. But he has a natural charisma of, I'll say, golly gee, I'm just like you, I know you'll like me kind of charisma.
Mm-hmm.
We are naturally attracted to his down-home humor, his ability to connect at that personal level. Didn't always connect at what I'll call the credible or professional level, but he could always, if he lost you there, he was always able to connect at that gosh, I'm really just one of you type of level. So he was a master of that. I should say still is a master of that, connecting at that personal level.
Okay, how about Jimmy Carter?
He has that same Southern sort of interest in being able to connect at that personal level. Yet at the professional level, he didn't have great control over his voice patterns. When he tried to have command presence, if he had lowered his chin a little bit so his chin was more parallel to the ground,
mm-hmm.
his voice pattern would have had much more command presence. He tends to raise his chin a little bit, which changes the voice pattern to one that doesn't sound, I'm doing it right now, it doesn't sound as much command presence. It sounds a little more strained.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, if with his voice pattern, if he'd learned to keep his chin parallel to the ground or slightly dropped, he would have had much more command presence when he wanted to be taken seriously.
Well, let's go in another direction in this field. Gerald Ford.
Well, we have to look beyond because, unfortunately, you know, I don't know a lot about his health issues or something, but he had a lot of trouble with balance.
Okay.
And oftentimes we have to be careful that we don't make assumptions about people, just like going back to the athlete and the mouth breather.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be careful that we don't make assumptions about people's disabilities or infirmities as being something related to intelligence. I don't know what it was related to his balance, but he did tend to have problems with that. And so, unfortunately, he got kind of a bad rap because he did have that issue of stumbling, and people thought stumbling and bumbling and equated that to lack of intelligence, which was unfortunate. He also didn't really control his voice pattern, similar to Carter, with a command presence either. But that issue of his balance being off oftentimes led people to make faulty assumptions. And so when we're studying other people's nonverbals, we want to be sure that we understand what we call what is their baseline behavior. And if they do have a baseline disability, infirmity, or some other behavior, we go, well, that's them. That's just who they are, and that's where we have to start looking at this is their normal. There is no true normal. It's what's Andrew's normal, what's Gerald Ford's normal, what's Sharon's normal, and then go off of that to know what the person is actually doing or feeling at that moment. And it really is about at that moment because it changes. Our body language changes constantly. So we can't really make a base assumptions about people's body language and said, oh, they're always closed and tight based on a photo that we see where their arms are crossed.
Right.
So really it was just at that moment. You know, at that moment, either they could be in a kind of closed up position, they could, you know, they could be cold, or you know, they could just have gas, really. They could just be, you know, trying not to embarrass themselves. We don't know. We don't know. It's
all I'll go with the gas thing. I'm going to go with the gas thing. Yeah.
That's it's all an educated guess.
Sure. So are all nonverbals alike? Are they good? They're bad? Indifferent? What do you have out there?
I like to say there are no bad nonverbals. It's just what purpose do you want it to serve? If you really want to say stop, not open to negotiation, don't push me, Buster, the talk to the hand is a great nonverbal.
Mm.
But if you want to say, hey, I'm here for you, I'm open, let's share, and you do talk to the hand, not such a good nonverbal. So putting it on a scale of like, when is it going to be an asset, when is it going to be a liability, is a much better way to look at our nonverbal.
Okay. So the context.
The context. Context rules, absolutely.
Context is king.
Yes, it is. Some nonverbals work great and in certain contexts, and in other contexts, I'd say don't use that one. Not a safe nonverbal to use.
Very cool. So you've worked with a lot of people, right, to become better communicators, would you say?
Yes.
So what
the majority of my coaching is individuals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like to say I'm the best kept secret. A lot of times people don't like to mention they've worked with me because it's like, no, I just have natural charisma. I don't have learned charisma. I'm just naturally charismatic.
I taught Bill Clinton how to be charismatic. Yeah, that's how. That's the ticket.
A lot of people don't. It's not great for dating either, Andrew, by the way.
Oh, okay.
People find out what I do and all of a sudden they start sitting on their hands.
Yeah, you're like, she doesn't know what I'm really thinking. Oh, no, she does. This is terrible. So in your experience and with working with people, what do you think is the biggest thing that people have to get past, the biggest hurdle? It's the number one.
Themselves. They need to get past what everybody else is thinking and just be themselves. So often people are so worried and it's so uptight about being themselves. I think everybody has a little quirk here and there, and I find that charming. It's really, what is your quirk, and just be yourself.
Mm.
Oftentimes we're so uptight and worried about what is the other people thinking and doing, and that's where this idea of reading other people's body language comes into play. And you know what? Really, we can't control anybody else, so why does it really matter? Just getting past yourself and being yourself, I think, is key. Key to not only understanding and building better relationships, but key to our business success.
You know, you just actually, now that you mentioned dating, how might this be helpful to someone in the world of dating? Like, say somebody's looking to go out dating and find somebody. How might mastery of body language, body communications, help somebody in that?
Oh, purposely knowing what your intention behind what message you're trying to send. Are you trying to send I'm interested or I'm not interested messages? Understanding which two messages you're sending are key.
Mm.
Sometimes I have ladies that come and say, but I wasn't trying to come on to him. And then be speaking to them, and you'll see that they're doing gestures that are all about connection and relationship and building a stronger rapport. Well, you know, guys, don't think that way. If you start mm-hmm. doing just rapport-building gestures, they're going to think, gosh, she's interested in me.
Yeah.
She wants to learn more.
Sure.
And women don't understand that. Women, they should oftentimes go, well, I was just being friendly. I said, no, that's not the point. You can be friendly and still have used gestures that are saying, you know, you're a nice person, but I'm
right.
not that. I'm not interested in taking this the next step.
Or you were being friendly with benefits.
Yes. Well, some women say, I don't understand. Why am I always hit on?
Yeah.
I'm like, nonverbals are saying that's exactly
mm-hmm.
what you're interested in. If you don't want that response, change your nonverbals.
I'm thinking of the guy at the airport who's bringing the plane in with the lights, you know?
Yes.
And imagine, like, you're doing that body language, and you can't understand why they're coming. I don't
exactly.
Why are they moving faster towards you? What am I doing?
That's a great visual for it, exactly. I have to tell women that a lot, that, you know, guys try to read all of that. But, you know, I feel sorry for guys. A lot of times they get shot down a lot, and they're always going, well, what's this mean? Can I? Can't I? What should I do?
Right.
Where do I go from here? And it's a lot of times women, in just their desire to not be mean, send the wrong signals.
Hmm. So that's a great thing to be aware of. Hear that, ladies?
Yes,
okay.
It
is.
Make a
sure great they heard
thing.
Me. So,
but from my standpoint, when guys find out that this is my area of expertise, all of a sudden, like I said, they stop moving. It's like, oh, they've become this little statue. They're still talking, but they're afraid to move.
Ah.
For fear that I might somehow, you know, laser drill into their and read their mind or something. I'm not sure, but.
Well, that's why I've built this electric body language suit that does it all for me.
Hey, now that's a good idea. That's a great thing that we could market. Absolutely.
That's product of the future. I've also watched too much Jetsons, so that's where that comes. So, do we have time for you to try to do a little demonstration with me over the phone? Is that possible?
Oh, sure. What should we role play with?
Well, gosh, I don't know. You pick something. Whatever we're going with, I'll go with it.
Okay. Let's see. How about making somebody feel really good about themselves?
Okay.
You meet them for the very first time, and you want to make somebody feel really special.
Right.
Okay. What you do, oftentimes, here, at least here in the Pacific Northwest, we mention something like the weather. Like, oh, it's a wonderful day out today, or it's just the sunshine is so amazing. Do you guys do that in New York a lot? Do you talk about the weather?
Yeah, but well, the weather here is notable for changing every 5 minutes, so yes.
Okay. Well, this is a fun one to do. You want to put your hand at your and arm at your waist with the palm up.
Okay, so my hand is at my waist with the palm up.
At your waist, yes, so your arm is parallel
on the side.
To your hand.
Okay.
Yeah, on the side.
Uh-huh.
And your arm is just parallel to the ground with your palm up.
Okay.
And gently just at the shoulder start to move your hand out towards, well, we'll just say a phantom person, whomever you're speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
And as you start to move the hand with the palm up out towards them, go, isn't it a wonderful day? And as you finish the word wonderful, your fingers should be pointing right at that person.
So my, okay, like I had my hand kind of cupped, so I'm not sure if I'm getting this right.
Cupped is fine.
Cupped is fine, but do I then straighten out my hand so that it's pointing at them?
Yes, you just
at the end.
Well, and you swing out your whole arm, so your arm is just kind of making a breathing motion between you and the your listener, and your arm and hand are just gently going back and forth between your waist and about where the listener's waist would be.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
okay.
And when you say. Yeah, and so it's just kind of going back and forth, flowing back and forth, the hand and arm. And each time you come to one of those positive words, like, isn't it a wonderful day, you want your fingers pointing at that person. Because what you're doing is assigning the word wonderful to them.
Ah, isn't it a wonderful day?
So just unconsciously you called them wonderful.
Did you feel that? Did you see my fingers?
Yes, you can feel it through the phone. It's
there you
amazing.
Go. New technology
great
offered by Blog
builder.
Talk Radio. This is a special Blog Talk Radio, a feature of where the other person can see me. Only my hand, though. I paid extra for that.
Absolutely. But, you know, you can hear nonverbals over the phone. You can hear when someone's smiling and when they're not.
Sure.
We can hear a lot of people's nonverbals, whether we can see them or not.
I think that's very important for people to realize. Now, for example, I coach almost exclusively over the phone. Not all coaches do that. Some people coach in person for the most part. I prefer the phone. I can hear everything on the phone. I can hear that smile. I can hear the upset. I can hear if somebody's in a good mood. I can hear that there's something off. I don't know if everybody has that same kind of ability. I think everybody can develop it.
Everybody can develop it. It's a matter of how much effort they really want to be put in being connected. I know you're so connected with your clients that it comes so natural and easily, but I want people to know that it's a matter of it's your intention to be connected. But anybody can learn it as long as they have the right mindset.
Right. So it's very important for people to realize that, like, just because you're on the phone or even if you're behind the keyboard, be honest with you, I mean, I can recognize something's off. Just from, there's something different about the way that person is typing today. You know, it's just a little bit off. It's amazing what you can pick up if you're looking, if you're sensitive to it. So people need to know you can't really hide.
No.
You could run, but you can't hide.
That's very true.
I can hide, but I can't run, but that's another story.
Our nonverbals will give us away every time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important to know for people, not only can you use this to get ahead in your life and your business and your relationships, but you can also need to know that what you're putting out there can be read by other people as well.
That's the whole message behind my book, is not worrying about the other person's message, worrying about your own message.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I mentioned before, we can only control ourselves. We can influence other people. But we can't make them do something. We can't control them. So if we're in control of ourselves, then our message has the best possibility of being accepted well and understood. So why not worry about what our own body is saying and let the other person be themselves?
Absolutely. So why did you write this book? Who's it for?
Well, I wrote it for my passion is helping professionals, that especially small business owners. I find that one of the best ways to market a business is through speaking and demonstrating. And I also wrote it for, I work a lot with executives and managers who are stuck in the middle. Sometimes they have to deliver really bad news but still be friends with the people. Maybe they have to mention that there's layoffs or downturns. Mm-hmm. So I wrote it for those two groups of people that really have to be conscious of what message are they sending. How do they want to be perceived? It's very tough these days with this economy for managers to be out there saying, you know, guys, I really love all of you, but profits are down and 10 of you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
And still being able to maintain that management command presence and that personal side where they know that you really do care, that it's not just some evil conspiracy throwing them out the door.
Mm. Very interesting. So let me ask you this. With your book, what is tied in with the book? Do you have any videos or anything that comes to people who have bought the book?
Absolutely. It's over at whatyourbodysays.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can sign up to get, I have a weekly video tip that comes out every week with their little videos. None of them are over a minute long, so they're really quick. Things that you can practice for that 1 week, get really good at, and then the next week you get another video tip, as well as articles on my blog. I've got a lot of guest bloggers. Always looking for more guest bloggers, by the way. I love to get into this conversation about what is good communication, what is quality, respectful communication.
Mm-hmm.
Not just nonverbal, but all communication. Being careful with our words just as we are with our nonverbals.
Okay.
So running over to whatyourbodysays.com and sign up to be part of the conversation, I'd love it.
Okay, great. And now, do you do the Twitter thing, anything like that?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at
SSayler.
So it's S-S-A-Y-L-E-R if people want to follow along and see what's happening out there in the world of nonverbal communication.
Okay, repeat that, please. Repeat that. I'm going to do it right as we speak. Twitter.com slash?
It's Twitter, and it's S-S.
S-S.
A-Y.
Mm-hmm.
L-E-R.
Uh-huh.
And that's me.
Sounds like a ship, the S-S Ayler.
Yes. And I also have a Facebook if people want to join the conversation there. I find the conversation on Facebook is always fun, and that's Facebook, What Your Body Says.
Okay, Facebook, Facebook.com/What the Body Says?
What Your Body Says.
What Your Body Says. I'm going there right now. I'm joining the conversation.
Fabulous.
Oh, learn how to avoid the three biggest body language mistakes in under 10 minutes. That's what it says right on the Facebook page with your lovely face on it.
Yes, and that way you'll also get some of the video tips as well. It's always a lot of fun to get conversation around the video tips going on.
Awesome. So when is the book officially coming out?
The book launched today, Andrew.
Wow.
But yes, yes.
I have great timing, don't I?
You have great timing on launch day. Yes, it's been a fabulous, just a crazy day. You're the final interview of the day, and I couldn't be more honored to be on your show as the final interview.
Thank you very much. Well, I want to thank you, Sharon Saylor, for being on my show, for some amazing information. I've learned a lot. I think my listeners have learned a lot. And everyone should go out and get the book, What Your Body Says. That's whatyourbodysays.com. And thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find me at www.myfuturecoach.com, on Twitter at twitter.com/coachandrew. And we'll be back next Monday with Denny Stockdale, and have an outstanding next 7 days. Good night, everyone.